We're going to start with question 49 and question 50 of the Spurgeon Catechism, the fourth commandment. So for those of you guys who are looking in the Westminster, it's the fourth commandment. What is the fourth commandment? The questions are the same in both. They're just a different number on the question. And for those of you who are finding your place in the catechism right now, I just want to assure you that I'm completely abandoning the catechism. We're not gonna look so much at the questions that are in the catechism, but we're gonna look at the concept that's brought on by those. And question 49 says, "Which is the fourth commandment?" And we can read the fourth commandment. We're going to here in a second, so I don't need to do that again here in the interest of time. And then question 50 says, "What is required in the fourth commandment?" And the answer is, the fourth commandment requires the keeping holy to God such set times as He has appointed in His Word, expressly one whole day in seven, to be a holy Sabbath to Himself. Now, discussing this fourth commandment tonight, one of the things that I ran into is that there are hundreds of ways you can go about breaking down this fourth commandment. There's so many questions regarding the Sabbath, so many ideas regarding the Sabbath. Is it a Saturday or a Sunday? And the question really should be, is it the last day or the first day of the week? Because Saturday and Sunday enters nowhere into the equation. Saturday and Sunday are modern ideas about the names for the days of the week. So is it the first day or the last day of the week? Where did the idea of Saturday Sabbath originate? Is the Christian Sabbath observed on the first day of the week? And is that biblical? What am I allowed to do on the Sabbath? What am I not allowed to do on the Sabbath? Didn't Jesus do away with the Sabbath anyway? When he did away with the law, when he fulfilled the law, didn't he do away with the Sabbath requirements anyway? So why are we even talking about this? And there's so many other questions that come up regarding the Sabbath. And for any of these ideas and different aspects of looking at these different questions, you can find any number of people that have opinions and ideas about them. You can spend hours watching YouTube videos on what is the Sabbath? Is it on Saturday or Sunday? And you'll hear one guy with a convincing argument here and then another guy with a convincing argument here. It goes all over the place. So what I'm going to try to do tonight is focus on a couple of questions that I think will help us understand what the Sabbath is from a biblical standpoint. And then I think once we've established what the Sabbath is from the biblical standpoint, then we can start to look at how it practically applies to the New Testament believer. But first we have to establish what it means in the Old Testament. And I think that really boils down to three questions. Number one, what is the Sabbath, and how is it understood in the Ten Commandments, or how is it understood in the Old Testament, really? Because the Sabbath is not just a Ten Commandment thing. It happened before the Ten Commandments. It was happening before the Ten Commandments, and it was carried on after. So we can look to the Fourth Commandment here, but it's also outside of the Fourth Commandment in the Old Testament. So what is the Sabbath, and how is it understood in the Old Testament? Number two, are Christians required to keep the Sabbath as it was delivered to Israel? Number three, how do we keep and honor the Sabbath as it relates to a practical matter in New Testament Christianity? And number four, three questions. How do we keep and honor the Sabbath as it relates to the practical matter in New Testament Christianity? And we're not going to get into all these tonight, so don't anybody worry. We'll probably just barely get through the first one, and then we'll go from there. Lord willing, the next time we meet, we'll talk about some of these other ones. So turn with me in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 20, and we're going to be reading in verse 8 through 11. It's Exodus chapter 20, verse 8 through 11. This is the fourth commandment. He says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." So I think the first thing we need to do is look at this word Sabbath. All right, what does that word mean? The word Sabbath itself doesn't really have any particular theological meaning. Sabbath, the Hebrew word used there, simply means rest or to cease, to stop doing something. So it's important that we know that, because when we look at the scriptures that talk about the Sabbath, we have a tendency, and a lot of people have a tendency, to see Sabbath and think seventh day. Right? Sabbath does not mean seventh day. It has become synonymous with the seventh day for a lot of people, because in the Jewish culture, that's when the seventh day was. The Sabbath was on the seventh day. It's also used when referencing a week. So sometimes the word Sabbath is used to reference a week's time, 7 days' time. But the word itself, the Hebrew word, simply means to cease or to rest. And that'll become important here in a minute. It's also important to remember that there are no names for days of the week in the Hebrew, except for the Sabbath. There's not a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Those are modern, largely pagan names for the days of the week. So for the Israelites, the week was numbered day 1 through 7, with the seventh being called the Sabbath, right? Or being called the rest day, okay? So next we need to ask ourselves, so where did this idea of a seven-day week start? It must be pointing to something else, and we know it's pointing to something else. This idea of working for 7 days and resting for 1 day must be pointing to something else, because we're called to remember it. Remember the Sabbath, right? So God's not asking the Israelites to remember something. They have no idea what it is, right? So what did he mean? What was he asking them to remember? This is actually the third time in Scripture that this idea of a seven-day work week or a six-day work week with a one-day rest was mentioned. This is the third time here in the commandment. And we're going to look at the first time, or the second time right now, and we're going to turn to Exodus 16, 22 through 25. And you guys are familiar with this account. So Israel is wandering in the wilderness, right? And they're grumbling about how we need to go back to Egypt. We had meat in the pots, and God provides for them manna from heaven. So in chapter 22, we see Moses is guiding the people on how this is to happen. And he says, on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers each. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, this is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay aside to be kept till morning. So they laid it aside till the morning as Moses commanded them, and it did not stink, and there were no worms in it. See, before, when they were commanded on the first 6 days to gather, they were told to gather only as much as they needed for that day. And if they kept any over till the next day, it would be rotten and stinking the next day. But on the sixth day, it is different. God tells them to collect enough for both days, for the sixth day and for the seventh day. And Moses tells them this, that they're to cook all this on the sixth day. And they come to him marveling, hey, it doesn't stink. It didn't rot. And Moses says, yeah, God provided 6 days worth of food. And he provided the seventh day's food on the sixth day. Of course it wouldn't rot. So Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. And remember, today is a rest to the Lord, right? We remember what that word means. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there will be none. So we see in chapter 16 of Exodus that he's establishing this idea of a seven-day work-rest cycle. 6 days you shall labor, 6 days you shall gather the food, and then on the seventh day you'll rest. They gathered manna for 6 days. Seventh day was a solemn day of holy rest. And they kept the cycle for 40 years while they wandered in the wilderness. That's how ingrained into the Jewish society that this seven-day week became. So God was feeding them manna the whole time they wandered in the wilderness. 40 years, that's a long time to be in this six-day, one-day cycle. So you can imagine that became a staple for the rest of their lives. And really, the interesting thing about this whole thing is I'm pretty sure the vast majority of societies today recognize a 7-day work week. Seven days, 6 days working, 1 day resting. Now there's some There are some ancient civilizations that had 10-day weeks, and they tried several different things. And I think it was Sweden or somewhere in the up there in the north. They tried to do a 8-day week, an 8-day cycle, and it just didn't work out. Now whether that was because the rest of the world was doing 7, and it just didn't work out for them. Either way, it's interesting that almost universally now, everyone recognizes the 7-day week. That concept of a 7-day week comes from this concept of God creating in 7 days, and 6 days, and resting on the 7th day. Also interesting, I think, when we start talking about the creation account and this day-age theory, right? So the day-age theory requires that a day not really be a 24-hour day. It requires that creation, in order to allow for evolution to have happened, for God to have created via evolution, and to allow for that time, we have the day-age theory, right? Each day represents an age. Well, I think it's obvious that when God is explaining to the Israelites what they're to do, to work for 6 days and rest on the 7th day, he's not telling them to work for 6 ages and rest for an age. They understood it to mean literally 24-hour days, right? Moses, the author of Exodus, writer of Exodus, understood the days of creation to be literal 24-hour days, which is why the Israelites model their work-rest cycles off of that. So anyway, that's an aside. So chapter 16, verse 22 through 25, we see that this 7-day work rest cycle, 6-day work rest cycle has been established. And then in the command, actually, in the command itself, we're told the reason why. For in 6 days, the Lord created the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the 7th day. Therefore, because God rested on the 7th day, the Lord blessed the day of rest and made it holy. Okay? So God himself had blessed and set apart the 7th day. His work of creation is an example. Let's look at Genesis chapter 2. That's where we find that account. Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the 7th day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the 7th day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the 7th day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So now the question I think we have to ask ourselves is, God simply commanding us to work 6 days and rest 7 days because that's what he did? I think we're going to find out that there's way more to it than that. God created in 7 days, or in 6 days. We can marvel at that. We can give him honor and glory for his creation, but there's more to it than that. And how do we know that? Turn to Deuteronomy 5, starting in verse 12. So Deuteronomy 5 is the second giving of the Ten Commandments. Moses is giving the Israelites the Ten Commandments just before he dies and just before they cross the river and go into the Promised Land. He's repeating these list of Ten Commandments to the Israelites and making sure they understand them. Here we see in Deuteronomy 5 that it's worded just a little bit different. And you guys will notice that right off the bat. So, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the 7th day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male servant or your female servant, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest with you as well. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So the first clarification we see in the second giving of the commandment is this word observe or keep. So in the Exodus passage, the Israelites are called to remember the Sabbath. And this one and the Deuteronomy passages are called to observe or keep the Sabbath. For Israel, this meant many different things, keeping the Sabbath, and we're going to talk about some of those things. And it was a great burden for them. The Sabbath became a great burden for them to keep. But this is what this is saying is more more than a time of memory and reflection, but it's also a time of turning from your own labor, going your own way, and taking delight in the Lord. There's an action. This is not just a stopping all action. There is a responsibility on man's part on the Sabbath day, on the day of rest. Isaiah 58, 13 through 14. Isaiah 58, 13 through 14. And we'll come back to this when we talk about some of the rewards for keeping the Sabbath. But here, we see that it's an action. It's not just a remembrance of what God did. It's also you taking action to honor what has happened. He says in Isaiah 58, 13 through 14, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, meaning if you stop what you're doing on the Sabbath, from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, or seeking your own pleasure, or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. This isn't a license to be lazy. The Sabbath day is not a license to be lazy. I think for a lot of people, sometimes it is. They say, well, it's the Sabbath day, I can't do anything. I'm just going to lay here in bed and veg out for the whole day. It's a time to actively keep or observe the day of rest, using it to praise the Lord for the work that he has done. So we see that we're supposed to praise him for the work that he has done in creation. He created in 6 days, and also for delivering the Israelites out of Egypt. We're praising him for what he is now doing. He's providing them manna and delivering them to the promised land. He's carrying them through to the promised land. And what he will continue to do, sanctifying and ultimately glorifying his people in heaven. And if we keep and observe the Sabbath day, God promises to make us ride on the heights of the earth. In other words, there's nothing on earth more enjoyable than remembering, observing, and resting in God's Sabbath. So, next we see the reason that they're not to have anyone else in the family do their work. No one else in the family, the servants, traveling guests, livestock, none of them are to do any work. It is so that they too might rest as well. This commandment is not for the fathers, just for the fathers in Israel. This isn't so that the men in Israel can sit back and relax and have somebody else wait on them, their servants and their wives, and have the put a carrot out in front of the ox and let him take care of the field. This was for them too, even for the ox and the donkey. They were all commanded to rest as well. It's for the whole family and everyone else in the household, to include servants and foreign guests. Now, there's a way that you could keep the letter of the law, maybe by not doing any work on the Sabbath, or a way for the Israelites to do that, but have somebody else do it for you. And guess what? If you do that, you're guilty of breaking the Sabbath. Going out to eat, going shopping, things like that. So a lot of times, historically, that became kind of the pastime to do on the Sabbath day. Well, we can't cook any food in our home, so we'll go out to eat. Well, guess what? When you have somebody else cook food for you, you've broken the Sabbath because you've allowed somebody else to work in your place. If you go shopping, the clerks, the people have to stock the shelves, everything that's involved in that, those people are working because you are honoring the Sabbath, so you've broken the Sabbath. Finally, in this passage, we see an additional reason why Israel is called to remember the day of rest. They were formerly slaves in Egypt, but the Lord delivered them out of the bondage. The Lord had set them free from their labors, and this day of rest, one day in seven, was to remind them that it was the Lord that delivers them from their labors and provides for their rest. Now, later on in this in this book, in Exodus 31 and in a few other places, we start to see the punishment for breaking this commandment. So the commandment is pretty clear: don't do any work, right? Don't have anybody else do any work for you. And then Exodus 31, we see, we'll look at Exodus 31 in a second. You don't have to turn there now. we see that the punishment for breaking this commandment is given. One of the most shocking examples, I think, is in Numbers 15, 32 through 36. You don't have to turn there, but just mark that reference. Numbers 15, 32 through 36, we're given an account of a man gathering twigs on the Sabbath day. So it's the Sabbath day. The Israelites find this guy with a bundle of twigs on the Sabbath day, and panic sets in. What do we do with him? He's broken the Sabbath. What do we do? Well, we know from the commandment, God commanded that the punishment for not breaking for breaking the Sabbath is death. What happened, I think, is that the Israelites did exactly what you and I did and said, "Oh, come on, he's just picking up some twigs. It's not that big a deal. That doesn't really require death," right? So they brought this man before Moses, and Moses goes and prays to God, and he says, "God, what do we do with this man?" And God says, "Stone him to death." Picking up twigs on the Sabbath, right? Now, I think initially I heard this and I thought, well, and I think a lot of people will hear this and think, well, that's a God that I don't really agree with that. It's just a couple of twigs. Maybe he didn't know, whatever. God had not really fully established the law, which that doesn't really work because he's very plain, do no work on the Sabbath, right? But I think the thing that we need to keep in mind here is we don't know this man's heart, this man who is picking up twigs on the Sabbath. It very well could have been that he said, "I don't believe God, and I'm going to pick up twigs because that's what I want to do right now." God knew his heart. God knew his heart, and the punishment that God gave was a just punishment, and that's what we have to live with, right? That's how we have to understand it. We don't get to question that. We don't know the man's heart. So anyway, the punishment is established, death by stoning. As so many other things in Israel and in the law, they would take you outside the city gates and stone you for just about anything, especially breaking the Sabbath. So, all right, so Israel is commanded to remember and observe the Sabbath rest. Why? Because, number one, God created in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Number two, he delivered them out of slavery in Egypt, giving them rest from their labor. Number three, he provided them manna while they wandered for 40 years in the wilderness. And number four, the punishment for doing any work on the Sabbath is to be stoned to death. So we see that for Israel, the rest day was kind of a burden for them, right? If you think about the punishment of death, that puts a lot of stress on you on the Sabbath day. You start to think, okay, well, can I be doing this? Should I be doing this? Do I need to walk this many steps? Is that considered labor? Tim talks about some of the more crazy things that they started with their laws. But it makes sense. All those things made sense to me when I was studying this, because if God is going to stone people to death for breaking the Sabbath, I want to stay as far away from breaking that thing as I can. Right? Whatever I got to do, if I got to hold myself up in a closet so that I don't do anything all day, every day on the, every seventh day, I'm going to do that. Because I believe God, I believe he's serious, right? Over the years, the definition of what work and labor is has expanded for the Jews. And I say has because they still abide by this law. The Jews still abide by this law. I don't think they're taking anybody outside the city gates and stoning them for breaking the Sabbath anymore. But that just goes along with them not taking God as seriously as they used to anyway. What we see in the New Testament, we see the Jews accosting Jesus and his disciples for plucking heads of grain on the Sabbath. All right, they're walking through the fields, and as they're walking through, they pluck some heads of grain off and they eat. The Jews say, "Hey, you broke the Sabbath." Right? You see them calling out Jesus for healing on the Sabbath. You see them, as Tim pointed out this weekend, this Sunday, we saw them calling Jesus out for having a man pick up his mat. Right? Leviticus says that you are not to bear a burden on the Sabbath. Any burden, even twigs, even a mat. So if you pick that up, you've broken the Sabbath. In fact, Jewish tradition has 39 categories of prohibited activities. And those are categories, mind you, not individual things, 39 categories of things that you can do that would cause you to break the Sabbath. And we'll talk about some of the more interesting ones here. Winnowing and selecting. You guys remember winnowing and selecting. That's where you separate the wheat from the chaff, right? Separating the wheat from the chaff. But for the devout Jew, that even means purifying drinking water. Why, you say? Why does that have to do with purifying drinking water? Well, you're separating what's edible from the non-edible. You're separating the consumable from the non-consumable. So purifying drinking water on the Sabbath is breaking the Sabbath, because you're winnowing and selecting what's going to be consumed. Shearing wool, washing wool, beating wool, dyeing wool. You know, let's just not do anything with wool at all on the Sabbath. All kinds of rules with wool on the Sabbath. Making two loops or weaving two threads, separating two threads, tying, untying, sewing stitches. Irma, you're going to have to find a new hobby on Sunday. no sewing, no twisting two threads, no tying a knot, no untying a knot on the Sabbath. Writing two or more letters or erasing two or more letters. You can't write two or more, and you can't erase two or more on the Sabbath. Kindling a fire or putting out a fire. Now, we might say, okay, well, that's not, I can live with that one. But this causes a problem for the modern Jew with electronic equipment. When you flip the switch on an electronic equipment to turn it on, you're creating a spark, which is a fire, and you're kindling a fire. That's prohibited. You can't turn on or off any electrical equipment on the Sabbath. Traveling more than a Sabbath day journey, which historically was 2,000 cubits. And that's a little bit less than a half mile. So for any of us that travel more than a half mile to get here on Sunday, we're breaking the Sabbath. Elevators that stop on every floor. And you think, what does that have to do with anything? So the Jews and their genius decided, well, we still want to ride the elevators, but we can't touch the buttons because that would be lighting a small fire, creating an electrical connection. So we'll just make the elevator stop on every floor on the Sabbath. So you walk into the elevator, you wait till it gets to your floor, and you walk out. It goes up and down, stopping at every floor all day on the Sabbath. Now, some of the more devout Jews will say, no, they shouldn't be getting on the elevator anyway if they can take the stairs. So that's an accommodation that was only made for the handicapped, right? So that's the Sabbath law keeping, according to the Jews. That's where they've gone with this. And it kind of makes sense to me. If you can't pick up a bundle of twigs on the Sabbath, we're going to try and stay as far away from breaking the Sabbath as we can, right? So, but what's this all about? You might say, well, that's interesting for Israel, but what does it mean for the rest of us? There must be more to it than that. God doesn't care about picking up twigs on the Sabbath, right? God cares about us obeying his commandments, which is what picking up the twigs was breaking. But you'd be right in saying there must be more to it than that, and there is, and we're going to look at that. The Israelites completely missed it. And we need to be careful that we don't do the same thing. This wasn't some arbitrary command that God gave to them, that they were to have a six-day work week so that they wouldn't wear themselves out. I've heard that talked about by many men that we respect. And they say, well, you see, God understands that man shouldn't work 7 days a week. He understands that he needs rest, and so that's why he's given us a day of rest. And I think that probably is definitely a benefit of having one day of rest every week. We don't need that day of rest. I don't. It would be easy for me to say that. Of course, I know I do, and my wife reminds me all the time that I need a rest. But I'm not going to die by working 7 days a week. That wasn't the primary reason for God to give the commandment for Israel to rest on the seventh day. This isn't simply a command to remember how God brought them out of Egypt, although that's certainly something that we would all do well to remember. God brought them out of Egypt. He delivered them from their bondage and their slavery. That's an important thing to remember. This commandment isn't about God feeding us when we're hungry and allowing us to rest for a day from collecting food. This doesn't mean that you have to go grocery shopping for 6 days and then you get a day off from going to the grocery store. It has nothing to do with feeding ourselves. This commandment represented a sign of something else to come. Something far more important. Something far more important and far outside of Israel and the Ten Commandments that extended to the whole world. And how do we know that? Let's go to Exodus 31, starting in verse 12. Exodus 31, starting in verse 12. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, 'You shall surely observe my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you,'" or who sets you apart. "Therefore, you are to observe the Sabbath, For it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. So the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath, to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, but on the seventh day he ceased from labor and was refreshed." So the question is, if resting from our labor is a sign that we may know that the Lord sanctifies us, that we may know that it's the Lord who sanctifies us, what labor is being talked about? Is it God's intention simply to save us so that we don't have to work anymore? So that we don't have to do physical work anymore? Of course not. We know that's not the case. For that, I think to understand what he's talking about with this labor, it's not obviously not what the Jews were talking about. So to understand what it is, we need to turn back to the creation account. Okay? And what happened shortly after God completed his work. And you turn to Genesis chapter 3 for that. So in Genesis chapter 3, we learn about the fall of mankind. Now, we need to take a second to talk about, to take a note about man's position before the fall. So God creates man and places him in the Garden of Eden, the most perfect place he could be in, right? Out of no merit of his own, God places Adam in the garden, a place that has that's abundant with food. The temperature is perfect. Every seed is good. Every plant is good. The fruit of every tree but one is good to eat. And he puts Adam in the garden to work and to tend to the garden. So man was placed there not of his own merit, but by the grace of God, who saw fit to provide him with everything. They were in the very presence of God in the garden, right? So this is pre-fall. Now, we are told in chapter 2, verse 15, that man was to work and keep the garden. But this isn't labor and toil, but joyful work. You think of someone that loves gardening. Someone who loves gardening goes out to the garden. It's not labor and toil to work in the garden for them. They love doing it. They love being out in the sun. They love pruning the bushes and the plants and harvesting the fruit. And now put that same gardener who loves gardening in the Garden of Eden, where there are no weeds, there are no insect infestations, where every plant bears good fruit. That person's going to be having a really good time working in the garden. So that kind of work is not, you get the idea, that kind of work is not what's being talked about in chapter 2, verse 15. But in chapter 3, Adam and Eve sin and bring all mankind and all of creation down with them. And what was the curse for Adam? Verse 17 through 19. So this is chapter 3, verse 17 through 19. "Then to Adam he said, 'Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, "You shall not eat from it," cursed is the ground because of you. In toil That is, that word means sorrow and labor, and toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field by the sweat of your face. Again, this idea of hard labor. You will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken. For you are dust, and to dust you shall return. This is the fall. This is the curse placed on Adam and placed on all mankind, that he was to toil and work in the garden. And he was to toil, not in the garden, because they get kicked out of the garden, right? So for the rest of their life, he's going to toil and work outside the garden. We're no longer in this perfect place where everything bears good fruit. Now we have weeds, we have insect infestations. And now you have somebody like me who's trying to tend to the garden. It's the worst thing you could. You might as well pull my fingernails out, right? I don't want to be in the garden working. That's toil to me, right? So we see that the curse from man is that there will be labor and toil for all the days of his life. And what's the opposite of toil and labor? Rest. Sabbath. Right? So we see here in this fourth commandment is God commanding his people to observe and keep 6 days of labor and 1 day of rest. A solemn and holy day that is to be kept throughout their generations as a sign that it is the Lord who sets them apart. That is, it is the Lord who provides rest from the curse of labor and toil. So how does this commandment relate to us today? And I think there are three main possibilities. One, we're still beholden to the commandment and should observe and keep all that the law has required. I was reading in Galatians on the way over here. Paul tells the Galatians, he says, so you want to keep the law. Have you actually read the law? He's being sarcastic with them. Do you even know what it says? And I think that's what we see here. Carry no burden on the Sabbath. How many here observe the Sabbath? Anywhere close? No. So it's probably a good thing it's not required for us. Number one, we'll talk about later, is not the answer. We're still beholden to the commandment and should observe and keep all that the law has required. See, we don't get to pick and choose which parts of it. Some people like to say, well, yes, we should still be under the law, but not that part of the law, right? That's not the answer either, right? The whole thing. You keep the whole law or you keep none of it, right? Number two, second possibility. The commandment has been done away with and no longer applies to Christians, right? Well, now you have to deal with Jesus' own teaching, saying, I did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law, and not one jot or tittle will be taken out of the law until all is accomplished. Excuse me. How do we work around that? Jesus tells us that the law is still in effect, that he's not come to abrogate the law, but to fulfill it. Right? Number three. And I think by my answer here, you'll probably see where I fall on this. Jesus has properly defined the commandment for us. He has revealed to us the true meaning of the sign of the Sabbath day, the rest day. We are to understand the heart issue of the Sabbath and all that is associated with it. It's a heart issue. The Sabbath is a heart issue. It's not a physical day. We're not going to get into these possibilities tonight, but I think before we do, we need to take a minute to understand some of the other covenants and the signs associated with them that God made throughout Israel's history. So you have his covenant with Adam, which there wasn't really a sign necessarily for that. But then you have the Noahic covenant, which there was a sign for. There in the Noahic covenant, God destroys the entire earth by a flood, except 8 people preserved in the ark. All right? God covenants with Noah to never again destroy the entire earth with a flood, and he gives Noah a sign to remember it by. What was the sign? Rainbow, exactly. So now, every time we see a rainbow, what do we see? We see the fact that God is sovereign. He's in absolute control of the entire world. He did at one time destroy the entire world except 8 people. And he's promised to never again flood the earth, or never again to destroy the earth with water. He has also promised that he will destroy the earth with fire. You know, six and one, half dozen the other. Next, we have the Abrahamic covenant. God has promised to Abraham that his seed shall fill the earth. He promises Abraham and his descendants land and blessing, and he gives Abraham a sign as a seal of the covenant. And what was that sign? Circumcision. So he gives Abraham the sign of circumcision, right? Now we have the Mosaic covenant. God has delivered Israel out of the hands of Egypt. He's brought them out of their toil and labor and their bonds of slavery in Egypt. And he promises to provide them rest, for he rested on the seventh day. He provided for them everything that they needed in 6 days so that they could rest on the seventh day. And he'll free them from the curse placed on Adam, that they should labor and toil all the days of their life. And he gives Moses and the people a sign as a seal of his covenant. Actually, there are many signs and seals within the Mosaic covenant. We can look at the Passover and several different signs that were given to the Israelites to point to something else. But the one we're talking about tonight is the sign of the Sabbath day, the rest day, right? So I'll just ask you, how many of you worship the rainbow? How many of you go out of your way to be in the presence of rainbows? How many of you have rainbows on your cars, on your, you know? That's right, yeah. So it's kind of been hijacked. The sign of the rainbow has kind of been hijacked by somebody else, right? Okay. How many of you, not to get too graphic, but observe the Abrahamic covenant? And with your children, and I think there's kind of been a history of cleanliness and just kind of an infection control reason that we've done that, but done it in the sense that the Israelites had done it, right? Circumcised on the eighth day. How many of us have done that? Right? And so I think the same thing can be said of this sign, the Sabbath day, in the Mosaic covenant. And what was the true meaning of this sign? Well, we'll look at that next time. Any questions? Concerns? Comments?